Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I've returned. I'm back. I was out of the country and I missed a really awesome discussion. I'm glad you guys had such a fun time talking about all the different, you know, ramifications of all the endings and all that stuff. It sounded like a great conversation. I'm sorry I missed it. But hey, how's it going?
It's going great. That was probably one of my favorite patron chat topics that we've had the pleasure of talking about, just because it was so open-ended.
Yeah.
And a lot of people couldn't make it for that week, not just you.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't feel bad.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a busy time. But hey, we're back and we're finally moving on to another character, right? We're starting a new series and we're talking about the one and only Erdnott Rex. And you have a little note here about what your wife calls?
Yes, Rex? So my wife calls Erdnott Rex a lovable teddy bear, but I think he's a little bit deadlier than that. And just as a reminder for our listeners, you know, we are still doing the corporation episodes. There's still more corporations to cover. We're just going to switch between them and Rex for, you know, alternating episodes while we can.
Yeah, with all the Krogan talk on the previous set of things, it makes sense that we're now talking about a Krogan. So he's in all three of the games, and we meet him pretty early in Mass Effect 1. But where do we start? Where are we starting?
Yeah, we're actually going to start on Rex's lore that we know about him from before we, as in Shepard, meet him.
Okay, so how far back does that go? Is this like another comic book thing?
It is. You know, it's not clear. We don't really get a date on the earliest details. Those come from dialogue directly with Rex. That dialogue in Mass Effect 1. But today, I want to talk about the earliest known lore of Rex from like an omniscient narrator point of view, mm-hmm. like where we can actually see it play out. And that is Mass Effect Foundation comic number 2. You remember how we meet Rex in Mass Effect 1? Well, he's a bounty hunter, he's working for the Shadow Broker, and he's trying to track down and kill Fist, that seedy nightclub owner of Cora's Den.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah.
So that, like, literally right before the start of Mass Effect 1, that is where this comic takes place. That's where the story starts. Rex is on the Citadel, it looks like he's just landed, and he's in the landing bay, and some CSEC customs agents are, like, giving him a hard time. They're giving him a hassle about his cargo, and they're like, oh, but sure, your cargo has to be in quarantine. Okay, so pause. This is interesting. Why? Because the CSEC officer keeps mentioning, well, the log states here. So it appears that someone messed with that log, because Rex is saying, I don't have any cargo. So that someone who messed with the log would be Agent Rasa, who is a Cerberus operative who is also after Fist.
Oh, okay.
Now, most people do know Rasa. You might think, I don't know Rasa. That name doesn't sound familiar. That's because that's her real name. And Maya Brooks is the name we know her by in Mass Effect 3, because she was one of the antagonists in the Citadel DLC.
Okay, so it kind of connects all the pieces. Rex, Maya, who is actually not known by that here, that's Agent Rasa, and then Fist, and our then coming into the situation having to deal with Fist.
Yeah, yeah, right. So Rex is arguing with these agents, and he's, you know, patiently, as far as Rex goes, patiently at first, he says, "There is no cargo, you stunted pijack."
Great.
But then he loses his cool after a group of Batarians, for some reason, want to jump him. Which is, like, not advisable.
Okay, this is playing out of my mind. Obviously, you're the one who's read the comic here, and I haven't. So this is always fun for me to kind of go through the steps. But I'm imagining this doesn't work out great for them, right?
No, it doesn't. And he, Rex goes 100% cowabunga, it is. And which is why we love Rex. That's just kind of who he is. And he and other Krogan are essentially like a very metal version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
They're battle turtle buddies. This is a callback.
Except Rex is like elderly biotic battle turtle buddy.
I'm getting all these images of like Krogan dressed up in Halloween. It was just Halloween here in the States. Mm. And I'm imagining if they were to celebrate Halloween dressed up as Ninja Turtles and how ridiculous that would be.
I think that would be a pretty low effort costume that they could totally do very easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They just, you know, tie a band around them and paint themselves green and they're good to go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Rex is fully, you know, cowabunga, it is. These Batarians try and pick a fight, and Rex, to his credit, he does try to defuse it at first. He goes, you know, maybe because he's here on a job, he says, "Look, boys, I haven't been here in weeks, so what we have here is a case of mistaken identity mixed with a whole lot of I don't give a shit."
What's funny about this is... if you were to read this in like Wolverine's voice, it sounds like a line that like Wolverine would say, you know?
It does, yeah. "Look, boys,
I haven't been here in weeks. What we have is a case of mistaken identity mixed with a whole lot of, I don't give a shit."
It reads like a big time Ed Harris line from Westworld, you know, like when you're the Man in Black.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, spoiler alert, Rex beats their ass. He beats up the entire Batarian gang, plus the CSEC officers.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's pretty much that.
Right, and he's probably pretty casual about it.
He is. He's got business to take care of, so, you know, starting with Fist. So before he can go off looking for him, though, Avolus just so happens to approach him and say, "I'm told the Shrines of the Enkindlers is a particularly intriguing place to visit."
Okay, so this feels like a total non sequitur. Like, this Volus just stumbles into the situation, doesn't realize what's going on. Or maybe this is like a sleeper agent code or something, like he's mistaking Rex for somebody else, or maybe
it,
not.
It basically is. Yeah, like, it looks intentional. Like, he knows Rex and he's just speaking in code. After a couple of repetitions, Rex does catch on and he follows this Volus to the quote-unquote tour. And that actually leads them to a back alley shipping warehouse where apparently it smells really bad, and the Volus tells Rex, "There's been some complications with his hit job on Fist." Rex is like, "Well, what kind of complications?" And the Volus, you know, tells him that someone else has taken an interest in the target.
"They're not want you to succeed."
Your Volus voice here sounds like the really old guy from The Simpsons. Hans Molman, that's his name. "You call that a knife? This is a knife. Down I go." Yeah.
I'm an elderly Volus. Yeah. So, everyone's an old man in this mission. The Volus tells him, you know, "Look, someone else is trying to get to your target. They don't want you to succeed." Now, we know that Rasa works for Cerberus because this someone else that doesn't want Rex to succeed is the Elusive Man. All the way back in Mass Effect 1, this is so fascinating. Yeah. The Elusive Man is meddling.
Yeah, yeah, like this ties, I mean, clearly the comics are meant to tie everything together. So from a meta perspective, like, it's understandable, but it is kind of fun. Also from the perspective of, like, we only have the glimpse of what we know, what little we know about Rex at this point in the game, and what little we know about the situation on the Citadel. You know, like, we've only been playing Shepard for a few hours by this point, and yet all of these things are, like, already connecting and kind of, I don't know. It's like the wind of, like, is just kind of blowing in the direction of, like, oh, this is the way things are going to play out. Oh, you'll get to meet the elusive man and understand what's actually going on eventually, but not yet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all the way back in Mass Effect 1, as you noted, you know, comics came out far after Mass Effect 1, but story taking place before then. And let's not forget that even in Mass Effect 1, Fist was a double agent. And as far as we know, he was working for the Shadow Broker, but also Saren. Well, it looks like he's actually a triple agent.
Holy crap. And holy crap.
Yeah. Crisscross.
Yeah. This is like a Mass Effect villain convention or something, you know, like, let's just pull all these bad guys in on this situation somehow. And they all have an angle at it. You know,
if we had a cork board with some red yarn, all of this would be leading to Fist right in the middle, which is hilarious that his name is Fist.
Yeah. Fist. I always thought that was a very funny kind of name. Like, I get that it's meant to be like aggressive, like a punch, you know, but
right,
it also is a little bit kind of really, you're going with that name?
My name is Fist, this is my buddy Thud, and Oof
and Foot. I'm Fist. Fist, this is Foot. Get out of our way.
I'm Fist, this is Foot, your face.
And that's Punch, so, and Kick, my brother Punch and his brother Kick. Don't mess with us.
Punch is actually a kickboxer. So yeah, it really is, you know, we're only missing the collectors in this crossroads of Mass Effect villains. But the really interesting thing is when Rex asks this Volus, who, by the way, if you're thinking about, okay, well, Rex is working for the Shadow Broker at this point, who's this Volus intermediary on the Citadel? Oh, it might be Bar Levan. So when Rex asks who may be Bar Levan, who is this interfering party, the Volus doesn't know, because he says the Shadow Broker doesn't know.
Huh?
Like,
okay.
Like, we know it's Cerberus because we're, right, you know, just consuming the content, omniscient narrator kind of thing.
Yeah.
But Bar Levan and the Shadow Broker apparently don't know who's interfering. They don't realize it's Cerberus.
Right. So they don't have that information yet at this point in the story.
Right, which is really interesting, and it kind of leads us to believe, like, the Shadow Broker isn't lying to Rex at this point, but the Shadow Broker always knows more than they let on.
Right, so, anyway, I feel like we're trained to just kind of assume, even if, like, there's deniability that, oh, they probably still just knew, or in this case, it's like, well, no, they just didn't yet.
And no one knew. No one really knew about the power of Cerberus's, the extent of Cerberus's power at this point in Mass Effect 1. In fact, when we track it down because of Admiral Kahoku, it's still kind of referred to as like an Alliance Black Ops thing, which we won't get into that. That was retconned later. But if we're looking at the lore as canon, like, everything is canon up until this point now, then it was like no one really knew the extent of Cerberus. But anyway, Rex is at this shipping warehouse with the Volus, and he's given some extra weapons to kill Fist. He's also given some restrictions, which is really interesting, that a Shadow Broker mercenary, a bounty hunter, Rex, would have to work within some restrictions. The Volus tells Rex the Shadow Broker doesn't want Rex to kill Fist anywhere near the Presidium. Okay, maybe that's obvious. Okay. Don't want too much attention.
Right.
But interestingly, the Shadow Broker also cares, apparently, about collateral damage. Doesn't want innocent people involved.
Huh. Huh.
Okay. Now, what's really interesting when you consider this is this doesn't sound like the Shadow Broker that we come to know in the Mass Effect 2 DLC Shadow Broker.
Right. Yeah. No, this seems like there must be a reason, not just, hey, I'm kind of a nice guy. Like what?
Well, even more than that, during that DLC, when we finally meet the Shadow Broker and it's the Yogg, Liara does a little bit of psychobabble analysis on him. And Liara says, basically, through deduction, Liara says, you recently killed the Shadow Broker.
Mm-hmm.
You were his pet, and you've killed him.
Right. So it must have been after this point in the story. Yeah.
Right. So this is, Rex was possibly working for a Shadow Broker, the one that the Yogg killed.
Right, right. The previous one. Because, yeah, that,
right.
that tracks. And it's interesting that they would have such a different approach. You know, I guess it makes sense. I mean, Liara becomes the Shadow Broker. Her approach is different. Like, each of them would have certain limitations and certain goals and set those things apart from the others. So,
right. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe this was also still the Yogg at this point. I'm just kind of judging this off of the fact that the Shadow Broker is placing these limitations on the way that Rex carries out his mission.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels tonally different enough to assume that it was probably either for a very good reason that we just don't understand, or they just were a different kind of person who was making different decisions. And, you know, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
So, it also shows us a different side of Rex at this point, that Rex is not like super principled yet. He doesn't really have any responsibilities. He's not a clan leader yet. He doesn't have to look out for or protect anyone in Clan Erdnot. He is totally solo. He is a lone wolf battle turtle buddy, just out riding the waves of the ocean to see the winds of fortune take him.
This is a mixed metaphor. He's a pirate, and he's also
kinda a Ninja Turtle. I mean, he's a bounty hunter, and although he does still have a clan, Erdnot, he really doesn't. We don't hear him referred to as Erdnot Rex a lot in Mass Effect 1.
Right.
Yeah. We hear it much more in Mass Effect 2 and 3, and I feel like that's a tonal, like, priority, because at that point he's then representing the clan Erdnot.
Yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. This is something that happens in literature. Well, and in fact, I just talked about this on the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, because we're going through The Hobbit, and there's a moment in the passage where we're talking where the narrator refers to Gandalf, and then there's another two moments after that where he refers to the wizard. And the title that was used in the narration had specifically to do with Gandalf as a person having emotions about a thing, and the role of him being a wizard and wise and making a wise noticing of things. And there's a reason why that label was used differently. So it would make sense from somebody who's writing this, who understands literature, to say something like, we're going to use Rex in Mass Effect 1, but then as the character arc develops, we're going to start using Erdnot more often in order to draw that clan connection. So,
yes.
Yeah.
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 So, it's really, really interesting that we're getting this glimpse of Rex as, like, basically Bachelor Rex, even though he's still very, like, old at this point.
Right.
And Rex closes off this talk with the Volus, basically telling him, look, here's his house, but if you miss him, I'm sorry, the Volus telling him, here's his house, but if you miss him, like, his fist is going into hiding, and then this job is going to be much harder. And Rex says, then let's hope I don't miss.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, you know, so typical hard-ass, like, put on the shades and walk away from an explosion line from Rex.
Right, right. It could have been a little bit even more dialed up and said, well, it's a good thing I don't miss. Like, that would have been like,
yeah, exactly.
Turn it up just a little bit more.
Edgelord. Guitar riff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So. Well, man, this is a fun start to this, because I love getting the insight from all of these extra sources that you do all the research on. But we have to go thank our patrons, and we've got a planet card coming up, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are. This is the middle of the show. This is where we get to welcome our newest patrons, Kurt Mermuses. I think that's how you pronounce that. And Mazakazu M. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you all decided to sign up. I hope you're enjoying your ad-free episodes or whatever else you get, depending on the tiers that you sign up on. Patreon.com/Mass Effect Lorecast if you're curious or you want to see things that are going on there, or you even want to just sign up for free in order to make sure that when notifications go out and things like that, you're in the know. Also, we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Draco, Edboy, Kiracy, Lieutenant Tassino, Retrobot, Superfly 440, and William. Thank you so much for your support as well. And if you'd like to help us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We have this new review that came in recently. This one says, actually, it's from Anoni, I think is how you pronounce it, from the US, who writes, they have a question, Sam, so pay attention because I think you might want to chime in on this. Multiverse theory, question mark? 5 stars. Love y'all. Started listening about a month ago and I'm already caught up. Have y'all heard of the multiverse theory where our Liara, using some sort of relay, maybe a man-made one, eyes looking around, emoji, brings a shepherd back to our universe from another, a shepherd that dies on the icy planet in Mass Effect 2. Heard this theory from Miss Paragon 7, Paragon N7, on YouTube. It's what I most want to happen, to be honest. Anywho, great show. Thanks for the 5-star review.
Well, thanks for the great 5-star review. Anoni, I had not heard that theory before you brought it up, but I want to say that if that's the case, that some different version of Liara brings Shepard back to our universe from another one, then any label of calling Mass Effect hard sci-fi is going to go ahead and die on that same icy planet in Mass Effect 2.
Oh, no. So not a fan of the idea, huh?
You know, I think that these theories are really interesting. However, I feel like I'm such a purist because I try not to indulge too much in the theories that I'm spending my time in consuming Mass Effect stuff. It's all for the show,
right?
It's all for the show, or I'm looking at mods for like my gameplay.
Yeah, you're playing on the stream and having fun with it that way too. Yeah,
right, yeah. Right. So then I have like no battery left over to indulge in Mass Effect theories, because I also don't want to like get my hopes up in any capacity for the next Mass Effect, because like all but one theory will almost always be wrong.
That's true. But I guess the good news is Dragon Age is getting some interesting reviews, a lot of positives, some not so positives, but it seems to be selling very well.
And I bought it.
Yeah, and I'm considering picking it up. I haven't just made the decision yet, but that's a good sign. And they've said that they're not working on new DLC for Dragon Age. They're going right into everybody, like the entire staff now focused on Mass Effect. So maybe a good sign.
It is pretty fun. Yeah, I've tried out Veilguard, very much enjoying it. I think it's incredibly promising for what the next Mass Effect has in store.
Yeah, and all the squad focused stuff I think is also particularly cool. So I don't know. I guess we're gonna have to wait and see. But we also have a planet card. Where are we going? Where are you taking us?
Yeah, so we have a planet card. This one is Navos, first discovered by Asari pioneers in 430 CE, which is current era. Navos is a vibrant garden planet and home to a thriving Asari colony. Sandy beaches and romantic twin moons fuel a bustling tourism economy, while practical and secretive corporate matters are handled in spiraling arcologies built along towering cliffs. Even though it has been colonized for centuries, Navos feels like a frontier away from regulation and oversight. Consequently, a number of influential political lobbies have established sizable presences on the planet.
This feels like a very advanced and yet beautiful kind of place to visit.
Yeah, it does. And I chose this one because of the corporate presence, secret corporate matters, and then, you know, political lobbies that are establishing the presences. Beautiful planet on the frontier. It's an Asari one. So something about something with these Asari planets being like beautiful on the surface, but morally fucking eroding. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right, right. So, yeah. Corporate political influence. Uh-oh. Yeah, like we haven't talked enough about that for the last 2 months. But all right, that's going to do it for the mid-break. If you have any other ways that you want to help us out, you can do things like share the show with your friends, rate the show on whatever platform you're listening to us on. And let's get back to talking about Rex. Here we go.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, so what happens next? I'm ready to keep going with this because this is interesting.
Right. Well, all hell breaks loose.
Okay. All right.
And I wish I could tell you that was like, you know, set up very well. But let's just take a look at the next panel that we see Rex in. And by the way, if you're wondering what we're looking at, this is why you should tune into our live shows.
Yeah.
Or the YouTube because
videos,
we have a visual here on screen.
Yeah, so this is a big two-page looking panel.
Right. So we get like zero prior context as to what this is, other than Rex, quote unquote, must be having fun with the complication that Rasa sent after him. And we see Rex like standing on top of a burning pile of like corpses and debris. And he's like, you know, sometimes crazy is the best way to go. And then he gets shot in the chest.
Yeah.
What the?
Yeah.
Son of a oomph,
he says.
Pa-cow.
Yeah.
Crack. Now you've done it.
Yeah, that now you've done it is so funny to me. It's just so badass. You know, Rex getting sniped square in the chest, and you can just, it's almost like you can hear him go, oh, now you've done it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, characteristically stoic of Rex to get nailed by a sniper round in the chest and just laugh it off. So he gets up and somehow he finds himself like behind this guy with the sniper, and he shoots him apparently a point blank range with a shotgun, but doesn't want to kill the guy. So he doesn't kill him. He must've been using some concussive rounds or something like that. And they get to talking. And Rex says that he purposefully didn't kill him because he wants information. Another interesting point here, that Rex is not this stupid, violent Krogan that the stereotypes would have you believe within the Mass Effect universe, that all Krogan are just dumb and, you know, they can't plan. Mm-hmm. Rex clearly plans here. He doesn't want to kill the guy, wants information. And then the guy tells Rex he wasn't trying to kill him either, just trying to slow him down.
And he's like, you're a Krogan. I know I can just shoot you in the chest with a sniper rifle and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, all right.
That's my slow you down plan.
Yeah. And then like the guy takes off his helmet and Rex recognizes him. So Rex is like, you know, he asks him his name, like, and the name is J-Sox. Like
Jesus.
it's like Jason, but with an X instead of an N at the end. So just socks. I don't know.
I guess. Yeah.
He's like J-Sox. And so they recognize each other. And then J-Sox tells him, look, I'm sorry I shot you, but I wasn't trying to kill you. I don't know who your target is, just that I needed to keep you from getting to him.
Mm. So this is somebody who's being paid to do a thing, but hasn't been filled in on all the information.
Right. Compartmentalized mission details,
right?
Classic, a mercenary, classic Cerberus,
right? Mercenary. Hey, we'll pay you, but like, don't ask questions.
Yeah, classic Cerberus. So Rex asks, "Well, what the hell am I supposed to do with you now, J-Sox?" And this is when J-Sox reveals, "I hope you haven't forgotten that time I pulled your ass off that burning ship."
Oh wait, so they've been like mercenary buddies in the past? Is that what's going on here?
Mercenary buddies,
battle turtle buddy, and his J-Sox friend.
Yeah, what?
Like, shooting people together.
It's like was Rex involved in a very weird network procedural buddy cop drama?
Oh, I don't hope know. So. I hope so. I would watch that. Yeah.
I would watch it. Rex and J-Sox, both names, end in X. What could go wrong?
Right.
So Rex responds by going, "Oh, here we go again." And so, yeah, clearly they have a long history, and he's been roasted about that, getting trapped on a burning ship multiple times. And also, we're learning now that we have this random guy named J-Sox to thank for one of the best members of our crew in Mass Effect.
Thanks, J-Sox.
Thanks for saving Rex from that burning ship, J-Sox.
Good job, J-Sox.
Anyway, we'll never hear from you again after this comic.
Right, yeah, like, who is this guy? I guess he doesn't show up anywhere, right?
Like, right, yeah. So they have a bit of a funny, odd couple banter back and forth, and Rex says, "Well, the only reason I was in that burning ship was because you showed up late. I had to take out the entire crew by myself."
Yeah, okay, so...
Cue canned laughter.
Right. So they're just like, this has become a like comedy sequence, right? They're just like yucking it up, like old buddies.
Yeah.
But so what's going on? There was like flames and fighting earlier, right? Like, so where does this go? Now what?
Right. The next panels are hilarious because they're just kind of like walking through the smoldering ruins of somewhere on the Citadel that they've just vaporized. And then they reach the outside of a bar where J-Sox asks if Rex wants to join him for a drink. He says, "I'm buying."
And we just set a part of the Citadel on fire. Let's go get a drink.
Because you're my best friend. Anyway, Rex catches on and he realizes, hold on a second. J-Sox is still delaying me from getting to my target. So then Rex walks away, but he keeps J-Sox's rifle.
Okay.
Because he liked a rifle.
Right.
I guess.
That makes sense. I mean, if we were playing as Rex in that situation, we would keep the rifle also.
Oh, yeah. I'm a loot goblin. Yeah. I always do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Rex gets to Fist's home. He goes up the elevator, the doors open, and immediately he's guns blazing. He tosses a grenade out the elevator doors, it lands at Fist's guard's feet. And the next panel is this badass, like, Rex through the flames, saying, like, "Fist, come on out, I'll make it quick."
Nice.
It's like, okay, yeah, of course, right?
I'd watch this movie. This is somebody needs to do this.
This is like, okay, The Rock could play Rex here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is the archetype of The Rock's casting.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. You know what this reminds me of? It's kind of like Judge Dredd.
Or Bautista. Dave Bautista.
Yeah, but like in a Judge Dredd kind of role, right? Like that, like,
yeah.
You know, like you just kind of bust your way through and like, I'm the law, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. RoboCop plus Grizzly Bear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what Rex doesn't know at this point is that Rasa, aka Brooks, has already reached and bargained with Fist in Fist's apartment.
Mm. Okay.
Rex is too late. Yeah. So Rex gets into Fist's apartment and no one's there.
So he's like tossing grenades into like nowhere.
Basically, yeah. And then he like you can just imagine the heavy metal rock playing in the background, Rex walking through the flames, "Come on, Fist," and then he gets into the door, it opens, and no one's there.
It's like crickets, and he's like looking around like
Exactly. And in the next panel he even goes, "Well, shit."
right.
So the guy's not even there, and Rex is just like, "Well, damn." And then Rex gets back into the elevator, and a maintenance worker, Rasa, asks if he's going down. And Rex is like, "Yeah, seems like it."
Like, I don't know, gotta go somewhere.
And he's trying to like talk on the phone at the same time. He's like, "Yeah, seems like it." "Oh yeah, the guy wasn't there, Shadow Broker, I don't know." He's basically saying like, "Yeah, I don't know, the mission's not over yet, I'll find him, no, I swear. Are you going down?" Yeah, it seems like it. It's just like basically relaying his mission's failure.
Right.
And what's so funny is like the casualness of it all.
Right. And like on top of it, it's Mass Effect 1, so the elevator would have been taking a really long time.
Exactly. Rex has no idea who Rasa is, by the way, and Rasa's standing right beside him in the elevator, posing as a maintenance worker. Mm-hmm. And yet, she's a Cerberus operative who just, like, talked with Fist right before he got there. So Rex has no idea who she is, but she knows everything about him, because at the very beginning of this comic, she was reviewing a dossier of Rex. And she knows that he was trying to kill the guy who she's trying to get to defect from the Shadow Broker and Saren.
Right, right. Okay.
So it's like this really weird kind of incredibly important scene where Rex is like so like dopey, kind of not really dopey. Like, it's not his fault, but like, he doesn't know anything. But at this point, when we're reading this, we as the players know how important all of those events that just happened were, and how different the entire series could have ended up if Rex actually got to Fist first.
Yeah. 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 So is there more dialogue between them? Do we get like, does the scene play out? Like,
yeah.
Where does it go?
One of the final panels is Ross is like, tough day. And Rex goes, it's complicated. And Ross is like, I know what you mean.
You know what this reminds me of is movies like Pulp Fiction, where you have like these badass characters, but then all of a sudden they're in like an awkward situation. And it's like, oh yeah, they're human too. Or in this case, Krogan.
It feels very Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, yeah. That's where you have like music that doesn't fit the scene playing in the background. It's like the girl from Ipanema is playing in the elevator while they're like, you know, tough day, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is great. This is great. So
Rex is dripping blood.
Right, right. Now, is there some other connection between Rasa and Rex?
Like, I don't know. Honestly, I kind of see it, though, because just of the way the body language is in the comics, like they're in this elevator together, especially the way that this ends, this comic, the elevator door opens up and CSEC agents are just waiting, guns drawn, and they're like, hands up, and they apprehend Rex. That's the implication. Mm-hmm. Leading Rex to where we meet him in the CSEC Academy in Mass Effect 1.
Oh, okay. So that's where it ties back in. Okay.
Oh, right, cool. And he can also show up in Cora's Den, though, depending on the sequence of events you do in Mass Effect 1. But as for Rasa, she calls the Elusive Man after this, and she lets him know she got a bunch of files off of Fist's terminal, which would mean that Rasa, Cerberus, they know about Tally at this point, because Fist betrayed Tally for the Shadow Broker.
Right, right.
So the Elusive Man asks why she let Fist go. And she says that she needs him alive because she wants to learn more about Fist's connection to Saren. What's so interesting here is that this means as early as Mass Effect 1, the Elusive Man was well aware that Saren was a rogue Spectre hell-bent on bringing back the Reapers.
Yeah.
Because of the evidence that Tally had that she was going to give the Shadow Broker. So the Elusive Man is now aware of all of this well before we meet him.
Right. Right, man. These little details just make certain characters like the Elusive Man or the Shadow Broker infinitely more interesting and detailed. You know, like, because those are characters you know are plugged into things that we don't know that they know necessarily. Like, it's not like we ever get like a whole list of like, here's everything this person knew and here was everything that they had in the works. It's a lot of it is just kind of off in the shadows, right? But to be able to kind of piece that together is really cool.
And it also, it helps bridge the gap in where we pick up in Mass Effect 2 when we first meet the Elusive Man, where we're like, okay, there's this super rich guy, human supremacist. All of a sudden, he knows all this stuff about the Reapers, including the Collectors, and he's had all this time to repair. How is that? Well, apparently, you know, the Elusive Man knew about the Reapers, you know, as far back as Mass Effect 1, but of course we know that he knew about them way before that.
Right.
Because when he was still Jack Harper, he got indoctrinated. He saw his friend Ben die. Eva Corey died. All of that stuff from the earlier comics. But as the Elusive Man with Cerberus, clearly with operations going, his influence extends as far back as Mass Effect 1, where he would have seen the evidence of Tally carrying the audio file of Matriarch Benezia working with Saren to try and bring back the Reapers.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
That's like lore dump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Charlie Day with the corkboard and the... Yeah.
We need to get a picture of you with an actual corkboard, like just like tying everything together.
I got space behind me in now in my new place. I got space. I could put up a Mass Effect cork board.
That would
and
be
like
crazy.
I'll have like a picture of Leviathan up there, and I'll have a picture of the elusive man and, and the biotic god.
Yeah, and a different color string for like that represents different things connecting each of them, and then
The Rachni somehow connected to Conrad Werner. Somehow connected to that one guy outside of Omega, the Afterlife Club. Oh, come on. Let me in.
That one guy. He should be at the center of it somehow. And everything's somehow connecting to that guy.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
We should do an episode on that guy. No, I'm making that, fun of some of the requests we get.
Yeah, we should do a sub show that's just made up lore. About maybe that should be bonus episodes for our patrons, is we just make up lore based on all of these connections that and then add things that don't exist and then pretend that they're real.
Yeah, that guy, the come on, let me in.
That's a good that sounds great.
It's just what you hear every time. But anyway, that's totally beside the point. The elusive man asks if Rasa is worried that Fist could spill the beans about Cerberus courting him as an agent. Because of course Cerberus is still trying to lay low and they don't really want Fist talking about that, and Rasa says not before the Krogan catches up to him, the Krogan being Rex. And the elusive man asks if that's why she helped, quote, that bounty hunter pass the CSEC officers. So apparently he got out of detainment originally because Rasa, a.k.a. Brooks, helped him. So it puts the Citadel DLC in a new light, and I wish that there had been some special dialogue about this. If fans know about special dialogue with Rex and Rasa, let me know. I would love to go back and review that. I didn't find any. But apparently they've run into each other and they know each other pretty well. Anyway, Elusive Man asks, is that why you helped that bounty hunter? And Rasa says, yeah, and I liked him. The Elusive Man's like, you liked him? And then she goes, he's straightforward, honest, and uncomplicated.
Yeah, it's like a personal thing, but I wonder if it's also like just kind of a mutual respect thing. It
seems like Rex is a bounty hunter's bounty hunter.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like, that guy's real clean and just does what he's supposed to do. But like, yeah, I can respect that. Like, it's like, when you're real good at your job and then you meet somebody else who's also really good at the same job and you're like,
I get you. Like, we're kind of competitors right now, but you're all right.
Respect. I'll shoot you next time, but for right now, respect.
Yeah, exactly. I'll shoot you. I didn't mean to kill you, but anyway, yeah. It's pretty great.
It's like John Wick. It's like in the John Wick movies where like there's a certain level of respect between like the assassins.
Oh, I never saw John Wick.
Oh my God. You need to go watch the John Wick movies. Like there's this similar kind of thing that happens sometimes where like two people will be at each other's throats and like fighting on screen for like 15 minutes or something. And then there's just this like level of respect. At the end of the fight, there's just this like respect. And then like
they nod and walk away.
Yeah. Or somebody just doesn't murder the person as terribly as they could have, or, you know, I won't give away too much, but like you get the idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of funny because like that like straightforward, honest, and uncomplicated is pretty like on the nose for Rex. That's who he is as a character, and that's like the final three words of that comic for Rex. It just kind of like puts it in perfect view of who Rex is, and apparently always has been.
Yeah, I also think that that's probably a good description for why a lot of the fan base likes Rex.
Yes,
is it like he's just Rex. Like there's
in a universe that's full of like these really heavy geopolitical struggles and drama and genocide and awful things and shades of gray and like, oh, the Koryans this and the Geth that and the, you know.
Well, and we were talking about how then, complicated like Liara's character arc was and how her emotions and her, you know, professionalism clash at times. And like we there's a lot of complexity with like Tali's a very interesting, complex character. Right. Like each of these characters is complex. And then Rex is just like.
And then there's Rex.
He's just Rex. Yeah.
He likes headbutting things.
And he tries to be polite. But then, you know, don't push him too far. And then he'll clobber you. Like, that's it.
And also, his dad's name is Jared. That's canon. His dad's name is actually Jared.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah, the diamond seller.
Yeah. Huh. All right.
Uses Rex's head to compress the stones into diamonds.
My mind also went in that direction that I decided not to talk about that. But yeah, I guess maybe Rex's head specifically. I mean, Rex enjoys the headbutting of the diamond. It's like the thing they have going. It's the thing they bond over.
Maybe when Rex was a toddler, he was like trying to get Rex preoccupied. He's like, oh, go headbutt that coal over there.
right. Ah, diamonds. Wonderful. All right. Well, that's going to do it for Rex before Mass Effect 1. I have to assume that we're going to be moving through the series like we did with the other characters.
Yes, we will. When we come back and talk about Rex next, we are going to be talking about Jared, his dad, so that's why I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. And we do get some details about how Rex was as a younger Rex from, like, before any of the games took place. We don't have any dates on those specifically, and it's all colored through Rex's own memory. But those are dialogues that he has in Mass Effect 1. We'll be covering that when we talk about Rex next. Rex next. but I'm thinking... the next episode, we are going to cover some corporations.
Oh, cool. So we're switching it up a little bit, and then we'll be back to more Rex. So, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anything else going on you want to share?
Episode is out with the Halloween special of the Avengers with Wolverine versus Hulk, I think. Wolverine versus Hulk.
Classic.
And I play another character, a different character, not Jarvis in this one. I'll let people see if they can identify me. They probably will.
Hulk.
but I am not Hulk. It was pretty fun. And I'm streaming every Saturday. My personal canon playthrough of Mass Effect is coming to an end. I have set it up almost perfectly. So I now only have the Horizon mission, and I have the final run. I have to hit Cerberus and then Earth, and then I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning to have that final part. I'm gonna stream it on in 7 day.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and that is coming up. That's exciting too. So
that is that's Thursday. We're recording this on November 1st. Other than that, not really much going on, other than I think we need to put out a PSA to our listeners. If you're in the United States, go vote.
Yeah, go vote. Please vote. Participate in democracy, please. So, yeah. Wonderful.
Use your civic duty and your privilege.
Yeah. Just please go vote. Awesome. Well, go check out Sam's stuff and come back next week, because I'm sure we'll have some things to mention about N7 Day. And hopefully we get a little bit more this time. I mean, hopefully they're shifting over to full Mass Effect production, which seems like they've been doing. And maybe they're going to be revealing a little bit more about the next game. So that would be exciting. And then there's also my stuff, robotsradio.net, for all the shows on the network, including my other shows as well. So go check out. Well, there's a bunch of stuff. If you like video games, you like the lore behind video game worlds, there's probably a show that you're going to like. So go check out everything. And thanks for tuning in again. We'll be back next week. And until then, stay safe. And, if you see a Krogan, hopefully he's a nice guy like Rex.
Don't headbutt him.
But, realize that if you do snipe him in the chest, he's just going to shrug it off. So there you go. All right. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.